Hello, this is a trimmed down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. Maybe the first track they ever heard, the first track that they may have brought, and several tracks that mark moments in their life, as well as one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Dave Healy, who is probably best known as Blind Dave to those who know him and are familiar with all his charity fundraising challenge sports events. Blind Dave's fundraising challenges have ranged from taking part in the Ultimate World Marathon Challenge, 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents, the Top to Toe Challenge, running and cycling from John O'Groats to Land's End, the Great North Run and the London Marathon, to name just a few of his successful fundraising challenge sports events. Through Blind Dave's Tracks of My Life, we will go on a journey from his early days at school, at the age of 10 realising that he was losing his sight and becoming a sort of celebrity to his friends at school, meeting his wife Deb and running off to Gretna Green to get married, reflecting on some of those epic fundraising challenges he has completed over the years with more to come too. And finally, we'll take a peek in today's woodwork workshop to find out how Blind Dave is able to do all those DIY jobs around the house, as well as creating some wonderful pieces of woodwork. Hello, Dave, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Glad to be a part.
So, Dave, how did you find it selecting all your tracks?
Quite interesting, really, because as I put on the bottom of my email, probably my top five were the songs that I put there. But I guess, you know, you can choose a track and you can think, and then you can choose another one. And you go, well, that ought to replace that one. So it was sort of an interesting, not difficult, but interesting. But I just thought, let's go through a sequence of events and, play it out that way. But these are tracks that are not particularly, you know, top of the hit parade for me. But they're just things that relate to that particular time, that particular period of my life, I guess.
Dave, the first track we're going to go to, I think, is a 7-inch record that you brought, which is Where Did Our Love Go? And I wondered if you can remember actually getting your hands on that 7-inch for the first time and remember those times back then.
Oh, blimey. You know what? It just seems like yesterday. As I said, starting senior school, you meet new pals, you're moving to different sort of music. But there was a little shop, would you believe, in Great Bridge. It was the place you went when you wanted your records in those days. You know, they used to have all the records up and down the shop. I remember walking in the one day, have you got Where Did Our Love Go by Donny Elbert? And they actually played it for me. And I said, that's it. And off I popped out the shop and off home I went and put it on the stereo at home and there you go.
Is there not a story about this track disappearing from your record collection?
Oh, crumbs, yeah, of course. Well, the laddie that introduced me to Donny Elbert, he'd got pretty well all of his singles. And he came to our house a few times. And then the one time I went to play it, I thought, where's that record gone? The single, you know, it's not in my little rack. And lo and behold, at his house, it seemed that he had the whole collection. And he'd been to our house a couple of times. And I'm thinking, are you a bit light-fingered? What happened to my copy? I never did ask the question. I thought, well, that's a bit rude. And I thought, if you're that desperate for a record, you can have it. And that was, a little story there. So he's got the complete collection. And I'm missing my first ever single.
And if I can take you back, probably a little bit further back, I think at the age of 10, when you realised that you did have retinitis pigmentosa, and people at school, I think, called you a bit of a celebrity. Did you feel like you were a celebrity at that time, or did you feel very different to the other kids at school?
No, I suppose it's amazing what you do remember in life, isn't it? But I remember going over to the Birmingham hospital the previous day. I remember coming back on the bus. I remember wanting to get over the park to have a game of football with my mates. And then I remember coming into the school on the following morning and everybody saying, "Where was you yesterday?" And it was a case of, "Well, I went to Birmingham Hospital." You'll never guess what. And they were, "What? I'm going blind?" And it was, "Wow, Dave's going blind." Well, of course, everybody was coming up and asking, "What did you do? What did they do? What did they tell you?" It was like one of them, "Wow, this must be what celebrities feel like." Obviously, at that particular time in my life, it was great that everybody was interested in me. But then as the years rolled round, I found it wasn't quite so interesting for me after all. But what a day, you know, a celebrity for a day.
Was it a bit of a shock losing your sight, or knowing that you were going to lose your sight at such an early age?
Yes. The fact that being diagnosed at 10, not particularly understanding what was going on, as the years rolled round, seeing my granddad, because my granddad was blind, and obviously I inherited it from my granddad. But I think that, you know, as the story went on through life to 16, the realisation, I do believe now it helped me in later years, because, yes, I had an inkling. No, I didn't want to accept it. See, at 16 plus, when my army career was taken away from me, the real sort of realisation of what was happening to me hit me. And then, like many others, I'm guessing, I had a couple of years where, yes, I did feel sorry for myself, and yes, I did ask the questions. But then, you know, my life moved on, career-wise, marital status-wise, and then I suddenly forgot about it. It was there with me. I couldn't tell you when I lost my sight completely, but I do believe from that diagnosis through, knowing about it at such an early age, it was seeded, not accepted, but then it wasn't. So yeah, I guess it did help me, to be honest with you, Toby. I guess it did.
So Where Did Our Love Go by Donny Albert there. And maybe that person who stole your 7-inch might want to hand it back now.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Dave, for your next track, we come to a track which I think takes you back to the time when you were courting with your wife, Deb. And I wondered whether this song brings a smile to your face now, as you said it used to do back then.
Oh, without a doubt. We don't hear it so much, but, you know, back then it was, and I don't know why, it was one of those records that I think the first time we heard it, believe it or not, we were in Borth, and we went into a record shop because a week, 2 weeks prior, I'd won a ghetto blaster at the local pub. It was one of those big radios that the kids probably wouldn't even know of today. Played CDs, he'd got tapes, he played the radio. You used to put it on your shoulder, it was that big. And so we went in and we bought some golden oldies, and that is exactly how Please Don't Go came onto our CD, and we both loved it, and we still smile today after listening to it.
And did you not both go away and get married and run away to Gretna Green?
Yeah, we because both Deb and myself, we are both divorcees, and obviously we'd had the wedding, the church weddings, etc. And we got together, and you know, we decided that we were going to be. And to be honest with you, we did absolutely everything backward. We got together, we started living together, we then had the kids, and then we decided you know what, we better give the kids a proper mom and dad, as in, you know, my surname was Healy, Debs was Roberts. So we decided then to skip off to Gretna Green. But we didn't initially go under the banner of secrecy, but we'd been talking to people up there about a ring and about you know, the hotel and how we do it and whatever. And the post, and our house is like New Street Station, still is. And the post used to pop through the letterbox. And after a period, nobody was picking up on Gretna Green. And we said, we wonder, could we go all the way without anybody knowing? So we actually got to Gretna Green on the Tuesday. And the only people that knew was the mother-in-law and my mom, because they were looking after the kids. And yeah, we got to Gretna Green, and it was nearly spoilt on the evening when someone noticed our accent. Where are you from? West Brom. I've got a friend who I used to work with in West Brom. Who was that? Told us. It was only Deb's blooming cousin. And he said, shall I give him a ring? And we went, no! So we had to go back to the bedroom with him and have a couple of glasses of scotch, which I don't drink scotch, but I did that night, until it was time for him to say, you know what, it's a bit too late to ring him now, isn't it? I'm thinking, thank goodness for that. So off we popped them back to the room. But, and, you know, we was laughing about this, and we've laughed about it ever since. But from there, we married in Gretna Green. We came back and announced it, and everybody called us Sneaky. Then we got engaged. Then we got, what's the one before? We had a, we got engaged, then got eternitized. We did everything backwards, but it was fantastic. And the stories to the rings as well. When I did the challenge from John O'Groats to Land's End, even Deb didn't know I'd got her an engagement ring. And on my wrist was a watch with no workings in, just a face of Deb and the kids, which I'll carry a picture. And inside was this diamond engagement ring. So I ran with it from John O'Groats to Land's End. And then when we got to Land's End, took it off and presented it to her. So I don't think there's too many in the world that have got a ring that has come a thousand mile journey and been presented. So, you know, it's like, it makes it special, doesn't it?
Casey and the Sunshine Band with Please Don't Go. Dave, we now come to a track that takes you back to the time when you took on seven marathons in across seven continents. What made you want to take up this challenge?
Well, how it all kicked off was I'd started raising money and awareness for guide dogs for the blind. I'd run a couple of London marathons, and it was forever getting more and more difficult to raise money. And I was just thinking, what can I do that'll shock, that'd, you know, put that pound on a form and knock it up to a five or a ten or even 100 quid? And I was in my workshop. I was weaving a couple of stools because I do carpentry as well. And Sir Ranulph Fiennes came on and announced that he'd just become the first person to run seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents. And I thought, now there's a challenge. So I nipped in the house and I told Deb. She called me stupid. We put a letter together. I spoke to Sir Ranulph 6 weeks later. And the challenge just started forming. And it took us about 2-3 years. And in 2008... on the 6th of April, with a minute to midnight, ready to run the first marathon, it all became, you know, it all became real. As the 10-gun salute from the military went bang, we started running. And then on the 13th of April, I crossed the finish line in London after running in the Falklands, Antarctica, then Rio de Janeiro, South America, Los Angeles, North America, Sydney, Australasia, Dubai and Asia, Tunisia and Africa, and then London, Europe, 7 days later. And it was seven marathons, 7 days, seven continents. And it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And Dave, the track that you've chosen, which takes you back to that immense challenge that you did, is obviously Barry Manilow's Copacabana. And I believe you actually stayed in that hotel.
We did. I tell you what, I could write a book on those few days in that hotel. And of course, being the Copacabana Palace Hotel, and of course, being it the the Copa with Barry Manilow, I was forever walking around the place, white stick tapping. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. And that's the only bit I knew. But, and I am the only bit I know to this day. But it just drove everybody silly. And I used to do it just simply to wind everybody up when we all sort of came together. But it was, that's the record of the challenge.
Her name was Lola, she was a showgirl, with yellow feathers in her hair, and a dress cut down her there. She would merengue and do the cha-cha, and while she tried to be a star, Tony...
Copacabana there by Barry Manilow, and that track that brings back memories of those seven marathons for you there, Dave. And Dave, for your next track, we come to another challenge for you. And I think we talked about this earlier on. But
yes,
this time, 10 marathons in 10 days and possibly a trip on a bicycle too, to boot.
Yeah. Combined 700 miles of cycling. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was John O'Groats to Land's End over a period of 10 days. I was supporting Macmillan Cancer with this one. And it was actually their centennial year, so we sort of, you know, we broke everything into 10. So it was marathon every morning and a combined cycle, so it was 10 marathons, 10 days, a combined 700 miles of cycling. As you'll be pleased to know, I was on the back of a tandem. And we went John O'Groats to Inverness, to Loch Lomond, to Lockerbie, to Lancaster, down to Stoke, then through West Brom and Birmingham, on to Weston-super-Mare, Okehampton, Truro, and finally, 10 days later, with a ring in a watch on my wrist, we crossed the line in Land's End. What a fantastic challenge it was. What an absolutely unbelievable team I'd got round me. It's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, and team-wise. But the team, the lads, the lassies, we're just friends for life now. What a team build that was. But of course, the record for this particular one was On My Way by Phil Collins. I forget where I was now. I was doing a talk somewhere and somebody played On My Way, and it was Tell Everybody I'm On My Way. And as the rest goes, and I thought, that's got to be the record for this challenge, because I want to tell everybody I'm on my way, and I want them to know where I am, and I want them to raise a few bob and awareness. And I love my drums, or I love to hear drums played. And there's a fantastic drum sequence in the middle. And I just thought, that's the record. And yeah, everybody will sort of say, wow, you know, why didn't you have the Eye of the Tiger or this? And I thought, no, it's Phil Collins, My Way, On My Way.
And Dave, what makes you want to take on all these challenges? Because one marathon for me would be enough.
That's a very good question, Toby. It's probably because I am stupid. my mum must have dropped me on my head when I was a kid or something. No, when I was a kid at school, obviously with my sight problems, I could play a few sports. I used to love my football. I'd like a game of cricket, but they put me in first because I could never see the ball, so they'd always get me out. But with athletics, it was something that I could do on my own. I love cross country. I love the track. Sadly, at 16, when the sight levels got to the point where it was difficult for me to run on my own and on the track, you know, it sort of went out the window. But when I was, I was around 38, 39, and I had the opportunity with someone to run a London Marathon. I did. I crossed the finish line at London. And I haven't looked back since. And, you know, it was one of them. It just perked up something within me again that I loved. And I loved my athletics in the day. To date, I've run 16. Well, we got a pandemic in the middle of it, but I'd run 16 consecutive London marathons, which was fantastic. It's just one of those. So, you know, people now know me for I guess, running achievements, for all of the challenges that I've done. So it's a case, I've got a great team, I've got guide runners around me. We all love doing them. They just say, you think them up, throw our name in the hat, we'll do it and we'll get there. And we have some fun doing it. It's hard work, I'm not disputing that, but we have a lot of fun in the training, the build up, and of course, the biggest thing of all is supporting the charities that I support. So it's absolutely brilliant. And the charity that I support more so these days is the Albion Foundation, which supports sport through disability. They're blind football, wheelchair football, disability sports across the range, underprivileged kids and special needs kids. And of course, as you can imagine, I'm in their world. And so it is special to me. So it's fantastic. And of course, it's allied to the team I support, which is West Bromwich Albion. So we're all on to a win-win-win.
Do your guides or runners or your team that's with you when you're doing these challenges, do they give you descriptions of the area that you're going through or commentary? And do you get anything from that as well?
Oh, without a doubt. They are all brilliant. And I've got to say, the lads and the lassies, they're just fantastic. Obviously, without them, I couldn't do what I do. But yeah, they do. You know, we come out of John O'Groats and the description that morning. I mean, we kicked off at 4 a.m. that morning. And my mate was saying, well, I'm in your world now, Dave. And he was describing exactly what was around, the little glimmers of lights and what's the name. When we did the Marathon de Sable in the desert, Tone would, you know, very often give me a complete description of what was around. Rosemary the same. And yeah, they're very, very good. And if there's anything there to see, to be told, they give me quite a description. So I'm running past something like a castle, for argument's sake, and they'll say, three turrets, you know, the brickwork is this, the standard. And I've got this picture suddenly appearing in my head and thinking, you know, wow, am I seeing what they're seeing in my head? And it's lovely, you know. So, yes, they don't just run and say, come on. We all talk and we all chat and I'll ask questions and they'll give me the answers if they can. So, yeah, it's some fabulous, fabulous pictures painted in my head from various commentaries that I get, yeah.
On My Way by Phil Collins there, and some classic Phil Collins drumming too. Now, Dave, for your next track, we might say might be a bit of something that people might not think of you choosing so far. It's Highway to Hell by AC/DC, but yeah. This is for another challenge in the desert this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just an incredible track. I mean, you know, you got the picture, haven't you? We spent 8 days in the Sahara Desert, six of them running, walking, climbing, crawling, cursing, moaning, groaning, hot, sand dunes, four mountain ranges, dried riverbeds, dried lakes, sand like you wouldn't imagine, sand dunes 17 miles long. It's the typical Sahara Desert that paints a picture in my mind, you know. Golden sands, the sun, and a camel across the horizon, how wrong you can be. But every morning at 6 o'clock in the start, them speakers must have been as big as articulated lorries, and it ramped up and they played every morning Highway to Hell by AC/DC. It must have woke up the camels 1,000 miles away. I'm surprised you couldn't hear it in London. You know, wherever was in the desert, I bet it shook Rutland Roll. And there was 1,300 competitors all setting off at six with Highway to Hell. And as you went through where the speakers were, you just simply vibrated for seconds. It was just incredible. And it was a Highway to Hell. So the record they chose was perfect. Perfect. Unbelievable. I'm on a highway to hell.
the unmistakable sounds of AC/DC there with Highway to Hell. A real classic rock anthem, I think. Dave, for your next track, you've chosen an Elvis track. And yeah. I wondered why this particular Elvis track and not any of his others.
I mean, you know, I like all kinds of music from, you know, from classical through country to Elvis, the Beatles, the Stones, you name it, Queen. But I do like Elvis, and I think that, you know, even kids of today can relate to Elvis, like the Beatles, I guess. In the Ghetto was one record I heard, and I don't know for why, whatever reason, but it was like, as much as I know most Elvis songs, and you can relate to most Elvis songs and all the words, but this one just hit me, and it was just one of those records or one of those songs that, you know, it just hit me. First time I heard it, remembered all the words. And then when I go around the house hoovering or I'm in the shower, I'm always singing. Well, am I singing it or crucifying it? Probably crucifying it. But it was just the record, just the Elvis record that stuck with me. And yet I like all of his songs. And when we do the Great North Run, would you believe there's an Elvis impersonator? It's around about 11 and a half, 12 miles. And for the last 6 or 7 years, we've stopped off and I've sung an Elvis song with him every year. And the first one I ever sung was obviously In the Ghetto. But it's just like, please don't go for me and Deb. But this is just the Elvis record that just sticks with me. And I love the record. It's great.
I know you do a lot of DIY and you have a slot on Connect Radio and you do all sorts of things around the house. And for me, as somebody who's visually impaired, I can change a plug, I can bang a few nails into a wall, but I wouldn't be able to do much paintwork. And I wondered how you find DIY as a visually impaired person.
I love it. Absolutely love it, Toby. I mean, my workshop, and when I say a workshop, it's 20 by 12. I've got power saws, routers, lathes, drilling machines. People come down and they go, you never use that machine. And I go, well, yeah, why? What about your fingers? And I go, well, I've got all my fingers still. It's because I'm careful and I'm sensible. And I love one-offs, but I've made all sorts of things. I've made the kids' bedrooms. And they've said we want a castle, Dad. We want a slide, Dad. We want wardrobes in the air. We want beds in the air. So I've done all the bunk beds and the slides in the bedrooms. I've made our wardrobes. I've made the desk I'm actually leaning on at the moment. Deb comes up with all sorts of crazy ideas. I says, I know you can do it. And oh yeah, thank you. But I do all sorts. At the moment, I'm doing a selection of phone stroke pen holders. And what I do is, locally, I'm close to sort of Sandwell Valley, as we know it, and occasionally the lads will say, we've got some tree trunks or some good thick branches. So I make these pen stroke phone holders out of various timber, like a bit of cherry or a bit of ash and that kind of thing. And then different people will ask, like my eldest has recently moved into her first house. Dad, I want a shoe rack. I need a new back gate. I need this. And I went, okay. But we've got to get lockdown out of the way first. But I'm doing different things for her as we speak, before lockdown's out of the way. Once it's over, I'm sort of kitting out a camper van. And I've made her like a little kitchen area and a cupboard. And I'm now in the throes of making a fold-away bed for her. So Toby, I just love it. And it's one of them things, carpentry. It's, for me, it's so therapeutic. So therapeutic. I attended Queen Alexander College for the Blind in Harborne many, 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 many years ago. Had a fabulous lecturer in Gordon who taught me a lot of carpentry skills. And I've just took it on now. And, there's nothing that is too big. There's nothing that's too small. I love the challenge. I get it wrong sometimes. And I get told off by Deb, who's my best critic. And but by the same token that you get things wrong, you then get to put things right. So I'm learning all the while, and it's just one of those things. I truly, truly enjoy messing with wood.
As the snow flies On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cried.
In the Ghetto by Elvis Fair, the king of rock and roll. Dave, we now come to your track that you would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
It's got to be My Way by Frank Sinatra. And, you know, when I do various talks and all the rest of it, and people say to me sometimes, you're a bit of a rebel, you, and you're a bit of a rogue and all the rest of it. And am I? But am I? I don't know. But it's like when people also say, listen, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And I think, have I? I don't think so. You know, I'll fall in line with most things and I'll fall in line with most people. But if there's something that I want to do and I'm determined enough to do it, then I'll do it my way. And I just think that that record just sort of sums everything up, if you want to. And as Frank sings, I did it my way. And I just think for everybody out there, we all are told at various times what to do. We're in school, we're in college, university, if you were lucky, work, you know, even the gaffer, my missus, tells me what to do. But, you know, it's like at the end of the day, I always look upon it as it's your life, no rehearsals, and you have to do what you have to do within reason. And that's what I say. When I go, and I'm hoping it's for, you know, not for another 30, 40, 50 years yet, and because I'd like to get up the nose of everybody. But I said to Deb, you know, when I do go, I want this to be my final record, my way, because I'd like to think that through my life, I did it my way. And yes, I listened. Yes, I've hopefully learned. Yes, I was taught. And yes, I'll always take advice and listen to advice, and hopefully I can give an element of advice. But I'd also like to think that if I didn't agree with who or whatever, I'd do it my way. Hopefully it would succeed. If it didn't, it was still my way. So this is that record for me that basically says it all.
Well, thank you, Dave Healy, for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Toby, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for having me on. It is a real pleasure. Thank you.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case.